My name is Rick Recking. I'm a member of the Prairie Unitarian Universalist Program Committee. We welcome you to our Sunday service today. Prairie is aspires to be an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter your age or your ability or inabilities. Thank you for coming today. Today we're going to have a service by one of the members of our congregation. Our services are variable in the sense that you never know what you're going to get here. And a lot of us are expecting something good today. Thank you, Steve Hingle. Our opening words will be by Randy.
Thank you. Our opening words today are from Mr. Robert Solomon's book, Spirituality for the Skeptic. At the very minimum, spirituality is the subtle and not easily specifiable awareness that surrounds virtually everything and anything that transcends our petty self-interest. Thus, there is spirituality in nature, in art, in the bonds of love and fellow feeling that hold a community together, in the reverence of life, and not only human life. That is the key to the great many philosophies as well as religions. Spirituality is an expanded form of the self, which is emphatically not to say that it is an expanded form of selfishness. Rather, as many Buddhists have long argued, and Hegel more recently, it is that passionate sense of self-awareness in which the very distinction between selfishness and selflessness disappears.
Our chalice lighting will be by Karen Deaton this morning.
Flame of fire, spark of the universe that warmed our ancestral hearth, agent of life and death, symbol of truth and freedom, we strive to understand ourselves and our earthly home.
Thank you, Karen. Now to the meat of our program. Steve Hingle's been a member of our congregation for maybe 4 years, close to that. And we welcome him to the podium for the first time, where he's going to speak to us about encountering the divine. Steve?
Thank you. So, a Unitarian dies, and on the way to the afterlife encounters a fork in the road. The left path has a sign to heaven, and the right has a sign to a discussion group about heaven. Without pausing, the Unitarian proceeds to the discussion group. Today you're in luck, because you get to be in a discussion group without having to die first. I grew up Catholic. So much of my experience of religion was learning about various ways I could go to hell. I was taught the story of Adam and Eve as if it were history. And when I got older and learned about evolution, my teachers admitted that perhaps some of the Bible stories were more fable than fact. That revelation made me feel betrayed by the adults in my life who had lied to me and was the beginning of my true spiritual journey. I began to question the hypocrisy of those who attended church but were not very nice people. For a while, I was without any church at all. In college, I read Houston Smith's The World's Religions and then became more interested in Buddhism and Taoism. And one day I was in a coffee shop reading a book on Zen, and I was really deep into it. I got up to go to the bathroom, and I was walking into the bathroom. There was this brief flash where I was looking at myself from behind, walking away. And I was looking at myself walking forward, and I was the door opening. It was my first experience of something beyond the ordinary. I was dazed and amused and perplexed that everyone else in the coffee shop was still doing ordinary things. A few years later, I found myself in First Unitarian Church in New Orleans. I can't remember how I found myself there, but I definitely remember that I cried during that first service. And not just a few sniffles. I cried like a baby because I realized that I had found some place that I belonged. And at the same time, I realized just how much I had not belonged anywhere before. First Church had, of course, a deep respect for science and humanism. But they also talked quite a lot about God, the sacred, the divine, and even Jesus. We had an associate minister who loved to preach from the New Testament. This gave me an opportunity to revisit Jesus with fresh eyes, to rediscover his teachings. Jesus, a radical communist rabbi. I love that Jesus ate with and touched all the untouchables. We're a week away from Easter right now, the most important date on the Catholic calendar. I, of course, don't believe that Jesus died so that our sins could be forgiven. What I love about Jesus are the glimpses of his humanity. He was in the Garden of Gethsemane. He had already been betrayed and knew the soldiers were coming for him, and if they caught him, he was going to be killed. And he asked God to take this cup away from him. It was too much to bear. He had a chance to run away and save himself, but he stayed. I think he realized that running away meant that he'd have to stop talking about loving your enemies and giving away all your possessions. And he just couldn't do that. He didn't die for our sins. He died because he spoke the truth to power. And he wasn't going to stop teaching people about love because he knew what he was doing was right. I can understand why some of you would not want anything to do with Christianity or Catholicism. The Catholics have a long, bloody history of oppression and violence, of systematically obliterating matriarchal and pagan religions, of waging wars against Muslims, burning people at the stake, subjugating women, and most recently, the sexual abuse of children and cover-ups. I can't imagine how people through the ages were able to read the New Testament on one hand and wield a sword with the other. To me, it's impossible to reconcile the two. So I don't. I see them as two completely separate phenomena. I've found a way to set aside all the history and doctrine of Catholicism and Christianity and to come back to the teachings of Jesus. Some of you know that I've spent many years in men's groups. Many men have told me over the years that the men's group is their church. At the beginning of a men's retreat in New Orleans, we would bless each other with burning sage, look into each other's eyes for long moments, hug each other for a full in and out breath, call the seven directions, spend at least 15 minutes drumming, and then check in with our feelings. We were claiming our place in the circle, and we were creating sacred space where the veil of the everyday world could fall away and reveal the true face of the world. Once I was on a men's retreat and was part of a small team preparing for a sweat lodge. As part of that preparation, we were placing large stones into the fire. As we brought the stones to the fire, one at a time, we would make up a prayer with each stone, such as, "I pray that my mother's health will improve and that all people will have better health. There were lots of prayers like that. We collected flowers to decorate the area. I got down on my hands and knees and crawled around the path, checking for anything that might poke the men's feet. Through this ritual, I shifted into a place where everything was sacred, and I completely lost myself in service to others. My men's group was a place where serendipitous events happened with some frequency, to the point that I took them for granted. One time after coming home from a retreat, I was reading a poem about a butterfly out loud to some kids, and while I was reading, a butterfly came fluttering in through the door and came within a couple of feet from me. I got to the end of the line I was reading, and without missing a beat, I said, "Hello, butterfly," and then went back to reading the poem. And the butterfly fluttered back out through the door. The kids were very impressed. Now, I understand that what I call serendipitous events may simply be logical fallacy, confirmation bias, illusory correlations, that I'm attributing some meaning to this event that doesn't actually exist. But I would rather live in a world where it does mean something. Einstein said there are two ways to live your life, as though nothing is a miracle or as though everything is a miracle. I like living in a world of miracles. I love astronomy. When I'm camping in the country late at night, I look up and see the Milky Way spread across the sky, and I feel awe. When I see pictures of planetary nebula, colliding galaxies and galaxy clusters, I feel awe. I know it's just science. I have a rudimentary understanding of how stars are born and die, but knowing that, I still feel awe, and I like it. I'm not talking about intelligent design, but there's a gratitude that such things exist. I don't know what I'm grateful towards anyone or anything in particular. It's just, isn't it wonderful that we are made of exploded stars? The carbon in your body wouldn't exist unless a star had gone supernova. That's amazing. We know that our universe started with the Big Bang and that our universe is dissipating energy and will eventually grow cold and dark. But we have no answer for where the Big Bang came from. Is there a difference between this universe and all existence? Is the birth and death of our universe a one-time event that has never happened before and will never happen again? To me, that doesn't make sense. And we have the same question when it comes to our own lives. Is there a part of us that exists after death? I doubt it, but maybe. I don't know that I can give a definition of the divine, and I refuse to pull out Webster's dictionary. Lao Tzu said that the Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. What he means is that our definitions of the divine will always be inaccurate. Trying to share a spiritual experience is the same way. It's like trying to describe a color to someone who has never seen. Words are inadequate. If you've never had a spiritual experience, I can't make you have one. You can't get there by talking about it. You can't logic your way there. An encounter with death or disaster might break through the walls that keep you from spirit. But I don't wish that for anyone. If you want to encounter the divine, you have to open to the experience. Feeling and movement and ritual can help. I believe that the divine lives within each of us. There's a jewel in my heart that is a piece of the divine, but I often forget that it's there. It's still there, even if I don't feel it. It's just that this jewel has gotten dirty from me being too busy, or from my using my head too much, or from being wounded. I get disconnected a lot. Disconnected from my family, my friends, my community, my emotions, my sense of who I really am, from nature, from the divine. And you might say, well, that's just an emotional disconnect. It's got nothing to do with spirituality, but I would say that it's both. Thinking and busyness and wounds get in the way of the heart, and the heart is our connection to the divine. I think many of us are disconnected and long for a deep connection to something greater than ourselves. We can find that deep connection in the birth of a child, in the eyes of another person, in the beauty of the Grand Canyon, in art and music, and in causes we fight for. Church is a wonderful place to remind us of what's possible and to help us reconnect with our hearts and with the divine. When I talk about a jewel in my heart, some of you may be thinking that this is a bunch of New Age woo-woo, hooey. I think we should all have healthy skepticism. I don't believe in most of what I see in New Age magazines. I don't believe in manifesting my destiny, though I know that optimism has been shown to improve people's lives. I think we each have our own woo-woo line that we're not willing to cross. You might say, well, I think there's something to that chi energy, but I don't buy all that stuff about the secret. And for some of you, that line just stops where science ends, and I respect that. And I also respect that you who are atheists don't want to hear about the divine and the sacred. This is the part that worries me a little. I want you to have a place where you feel safe and accepted and religion isn't pushed on you. And I also want a place where I can talk about the divine and feel accepted for my beliefs. And I hope that Prairie can be that for both of us. I know that there are others here who feel the same longing I have for deeper spirituality. I'm not suggesting we change what we do every week, except for one thing. I'd like the person presenting for the week to consult with Barb about the hymns. Music is one way we can connect to the divine, but I think the presenters often pick the hymns based solely on the words, and the music sometimes sounds like a funeral dirge. We've got plenty of good songs to choose from, and picking ones that we delight in singing will help us stay connected. I think Barb and the choir and our musicians do a wonderful job playing pieces that help connect us to spirit. I love that we share our joys and concerns, and I really appreciate how welcome people are made to feel here at Prairie. What I would like some of the time is that we use ritual more to create sacred and meditative space, that we read more passages that express connection to spirit, and that we be willing to talk about the divine in the presentations. I would also suggest we go through the UU course, Building Your Own Theology, which, quote, invites participants to develop their own personal credos, the fundamental religious beliefs, values, and convictions that inform and direct their lives. We might also consider some group within the church that would want to go deeper into spirituality or meditation, or perhaps do a weekly Vespers service. In 2 weeks, I'll be presenting part two of Encountering the Divine. This will be a service full of ritual designed to shift us into a meditative trance to open us to the divine. We'll use chanting, drumming, and spiritual poetry. Please bring percussion instruments in 2 weeks. For those who are skeptical, I invite you to see it as an experiment. Open up to the experience and just see what happens. Thanks for the opportunity to present to you today, and I would love to hear your reaction.
Closing words. Spirituality exists wherever we struggle with the issues of how our lives fit into the greater scheme of things. We encounter spiritual issues every time we wonder where the universe comes from, why are we here, what happens when we die. We also become spiritual when we become moved by values such as beauty, love, or creativity that seem to reveal a meaning or power beyond our visible world. An idea or practice is spiritual when it reveals our personal desire to establish a felt relationship with the deepest meanings or powers governing life. Robert Fuller, spiritual but not religious.